Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Prepare at last his return, your behavior our Savior discerns. I'll slay you in the end, my friend.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode, or I guess a very special episode of Tribulation Farce. I am one of your Tribulation Farces, Tim, and joining me is Jennifer.
Hello everyone, we're back.
Hey Jennifer, how are you today?
You know, I'm pretty good. It's a Friday, I've just finished work, my brain's been kind of blasted by that, but I'm excited to talk Trib Farce. We had a little break.
Yeah.
Because this is a research episode, everyone, that I've been preparing and agonizing over and being like, I need to do more research. And it's like, all right, Jennifer, that's enough.
Yeah.
time to just do it.
Will this weekend be the weekend we record it? No, let's push it down. And so, but here we are. You have dug into the library of science and rationality.
Yes.
And have come to us with some of your findings. What are we discussing today?
So I actually really struggle with how to even fit what this episode is about into a succinct, you know, set of words. And I think that if I had to nail it down to the most succinct thing, it would be dispensationalism. Now, that doesn't sound super exciting. So
it's a big word.
It is a big word. And you will know what dispensationalism is when you leave this episode today, which is great. But basically, what I wanted to talk about in this episode is, where the heck did all this weird shit and Left Behind come from? Where did these concepts come from?
Right, because did everything that is described in Left Behind, is that what they thought 2,000 years ago?
Exactly.
Or what?
So let me tell you right off the bat, like, and, you know, again, you guys know, Tim and I both grew up. If you're listening to this one randomly without listening to that, which is possible, it's like a one-off research episode. Tim and I both grew up super evangelical in the South, believing that we would be raptured away at any time.
I'm from Florida. It's different.
Yeah. I'm from North Carolina, but like very rural. Grew up in not even a Southern Baptist church, but an independent Baptist church who was like super into all this shit. So, you know, I think both of us grew up believing a lot of things that were like, well, this is what the church has always believed. This is what Christians believe.
This is just the default assumption of the Christian American, I guess.
Yeah,
you'd say.
Exactly. And then I went away to college and found out, now wait a second. These things that I was taught in church are not really exactly in the Bible.
Right.
And also, like, they didn't really used to think this back in the day.
But, you know, most of our classmates went in thinking that this was kind of the basis too. So it's,
well, our classmates in college, but then expand that circle a little bit and you start talking to people who are Lutheran or, you know, normal denominations. And they're like, what are you talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I've never heard this in my life.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, like we both very much grew up believing that the rapture, the tribulation, all this stuff was just like settled. Like everyone agreed. This is what the church has always thought.
There's going to be an end time.
There's going to be an end time.
Jesus is
going
to come back. And then for 7 years, a whole bunch of weird shit will happen.
Yeah. Now, we don't believe that anymore, but a lot of people in this country do.
And I think the rapture is like pretty broadly believed by
something,
you know?
Something like, and that's what we're going to get into a little bit in this. Like, I think the thing that's really interesting to me is that, like, yeah, there is a concept of, like, God coming back and like bringing all his people to heaven. There's the idea of that, like the idea of the Antichrist. Yeah, that's in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
The idea of the tribulation and like the rapture as it is set forth and Left Behind. That's pretty recent.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's what I was trying to untangle and untangle while I was researching this. So I
well, I have a, are we living in the end times right now?
There's literally a book called Are We Living in the End Times? I think that's a Hal Lindsey one or one of those, or Tim LaHaye.
What's the answer? You know, save everyone some time. Are we living in the end times? Go.
No.
No. Okay.
Well, sometimes I do think we are, but that's also what I learned researching this is everyone fucking thinks they're in the end times, baby. This shit has happened so many times. Like, that was the fun thing when I was researching it is like, oh, these people were like, well, this person is definitely the Antichrist. And I'm like, oh, Martin Luther? You know, the Martin Luther?
The Martin Luther.
You know, the Pope. And we're not even going to get into, in this episode, all the various people who have been accused of being the Antichrist through time.
Like, okay.
That'll be a different – because there was just too much going on here, so I couldn't even get into that. But this – so my research in this episode takes a lot from a really interesting book that I found called The Last Days Are Here Again, A History of the End Times by a professor named Richard Kyle. And I had the very unique situation of reading this and being like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is exactly what I'm into. Oh, I'm going to like reach out and like see if he's still doing stuff. He did.
Oh no.
Yeah.
R.I.P. King.
Well, because this book was actually written in 1998, which on one hand, I'm like, oh my gosh, this book is old. Like, yeah. You know, it's not up to date. But guess what? It's about the past. So that shit's pretty much still the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It still is like, this is how they thought about, you know, the rapture, you know, the second coming of Christ in medieval times. Like, and that's just pretty much what's up.
It was published after Left Behind.
It so. Was, but it doesn't talk about Left Behind at all, which is interesting. But they do talk about Tim LaHaye.
Yeah.
He does talk about Lynn. No, I think actually this is like.
What is this guy's take? What's Richard Kyle's take? Is he an evangelical or just a history man?
No, so he is a professor at like a religious college, but I definitely got the vibe of him. He's like a professor.
Got it.
He's looking at this academic and he says in the beginning in his intro, like, I'm not trying to say what I think is true. I'm describing how this changed over time and what different groups of people believed about the end times. And I think that cool, I didn't even actually read the whole book because he also gets into like non-Christian beliefs in the end time and like the weird, like, you know, like Heaven's Gate and like all these. So it's actually, it's a very, very interesting book.
When you said weird, I was like, uh-oh, we're going to have to cut this part out. And then to all our Heaven's Gates listeners, we are sorry, but that shit's weird.
No, I mean like cult stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Like, because this is the thing. Any time that you are in a period of social and political upheaval, people get absolutely bonkers about the end times.
Now, that leaves roughly 17 months on the Earth.
It's cyclical. Like, it comes and goes, and it comes and goes in slightly different ways, which weirdly kind of was comforting in a way to me that, like, oh, like, it's both comforting and also exasperating to be like, it's just the same shit over and over
again. Is it really, like, no, like, not to downplay the tragedy, but it's like, does 9/11, was 9/11 really bad enough to, for us to be like, just like the Black Plague, we too are in the end times?
Well, and you'll see, there's actually some pretty interesting coincidences with historical events happening. Not during that period, much earlier, around World War One, then I'm like, okay, I kind of get why these people did think this shit was going down.
Let me guess. Asteroid. Meteor. No. Comet.
No, more like the creation of Israel as a nation.
Oh, word. Okay, yeah.
Was happening. So, and, you know, World War One.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair.
So I agonized over getting this right. I really wanted to do a good job of making sure that I had taken different things into account when, you know, telling you guys about this. So I would just say, I'll again, The Last Days Are Here Again is a book that I use primarily, but I read a lot of other stuff. And I tried to give a fair shake. Some of this stuff is from like Christianity Today. Like I'm trying to be, you know,
presenting their argument without like.
Yeah. Without. It. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to be like, this is how they see themselves.
Well, because like, we don't believe in the Bible, but I would like to be able to untangle how the Christian faith sort of sees the tribulation and how we get there.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing that I love so much about this book too, and this is why like our professors in college were Christians,
yeah.
but were very harsh on shitty Christians mm-hmm. and on like misreadings of the Bible. And that's exact same vibe I got from, like, sometimes he'd write a sentence and I'd just be like, oh, you got their, you got their asses, man. So hopefully we might read some fun quotes as we're going through
cool.
this.
I'm excited.
So let's freaking dive into it. Where the hell did this concept of the rapture and tribulation and all this shit and left behind
the Bible
come from?
The Bible.
Actually, I guess kind of no, if you take it back far enough, like the whole idea of like the world ending and blah, blah, blah. Like that kind of, you know, concept has been around in ancient thought forever.
Well, anything with a beginning has an end, Jennifer.
Oh, and then it just begins the end though, because it's all a circle. Times a flat circle.
I don't know about that.
Bitch.
I don't know about that.
But no, there were early ideas about the Christian millennium. Is this a concept that you've like encountered before, Tim? Like,
yeah, I've heard the Christian millennium. What? I don't know. Like, if you ask me what it is, I don't know.
Yeah, but it sounds like familiar. Like, oh, that's a thing, right?
Yeah, like spitballing, it's the 1,000 years after the rapture.
That's exactly it. So, but if that's the thing, you say after the rapture because you grew up in evangelical church.
Yep.
Originally, the idea, there wasn't like an idea of a rapture. It was like, oh, there will be a 1,000-year reign of Christ.
On Earth?
Yes, on Earth. That was, so like in medieval times, like 1600s, 1700s, it was more, okay, eventually things will happen until God comes back to this Earth and we have it a 1,000-year reign on this Earth.
Got it.
The difference is that dispensationalists, which we'll get into in a second, think that there's a rapture, and then there's a tribulation, and then the 1,000-year reign starts.
Got it.
So
it's just, we're arguing about 7 years here.
Yeah, we're arguing about 7 years, but they kind of, like, split the event into two.
Yeah, because my understanding—
And in a very convenient way, so that Christians do not have to deal with the rapture,
hell yeah.
with the tribulation.
Well, because, like, I've always been confused about what the argument is of, like, does everyone in heaven stay in heaven, or is it just the Christians who are on Earth? Because in which case— Who gives a shit? Why are we promising this?
So the other piece of this is that, you know, if you are waiting for the 1,000-year reign of Christ to come, and like, you know, there's prophecy in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. So you get the idea of like, oh, these certain events need to happen before that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into this too deep yet because we've got to talk about the man who created this idea, but basically, dispensationalism took away the need to be worrying about if all these things happened first, and they made it where, well, God could come back. Jesus could come back at any time.
Okay.
All these things don't have to happen first. Once Jesus comes back and takes away the Christians, then all that shit will start to go down.
Okay.
So they kind of, in a smart way, took themselves, because if folks know about the Millerites. The Millerites were a Christian sect in America in, I believe, like 1840-something. I forget. But basically, they had some similarities with dispensationalists. They thought God was going to come back. But their leader, what is his
Miller.
Name?
Miller.
Well, his last name is Miller. He calculated and was like, this is
Got
the day.
Yeah, yeah,
God's
yeah.
going to come back. Everyone went out and his little crew, like they sold their shit. They're like standing on the rooftops in their fancy robes. God doesn't come back. It's very embarrassing. They're like, oh, just kidding. We calculated it wrong. It's going to be on this date. Obviously, it still didn't happen. So that's what it's, so it gets away from the whole date calculation thing that kept making various Christians embarrass themselves.
Yeah.
By being like, it's going to happen at this time.
I think they show that in the beginning of like one season of Leftovers or something
that
like
makes
that.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So where the hell did this idea come from?
The Bible.
No.
Damn it.
I jokingly titled the show notes for this episode, How One Man's Horse Accident Ruined America. And we're going to meet that man right now.
Okay, I'm excited.
John Nelson Darby was an Anglo-Irish Anglican priest. So as far as I can tell, Anglo-Irish means his family is English, but they lived in Ireland. So, you know, that feels like we hate him.
Whoa.
We hate him for that, for being a freaking
colonizer.
English dog.
Yeah.
But he was an Anglican priest, and he was very well known for converting Catholics to Anglicanism. And let me just step back and say, John Nelson Darby, like when you look up dispensationalism, for the most part, people were like, John Nelson Darby made this.
Yeah.
He's not the only person that had like ideas about this, but he is the person that combined everything into this real coherent system.
Got it.
Of dispensationalism. So he was born in 1800. Came an Anglican priest. And then, this is not a joke. This is seriously just what happened. In 1827, I'm actually straight up just going to read to you from the Wikipedia because it's so funny. In October 1827, he fell from a horse and was seriously injured. He later stated that it was during this time that he began to believe that the kingdom described in the book of Isaiah and elsewhere in the Old Testament was entirely different from the Christian church.
Whoa.
So my man fell off a horse and got thinking.
Like, that laudanum hit different.
The laudanum, what? Yeah, man, like whatever, like lead filled, like mercury medicine.
Yeah.
I mean, and also just probably a head wound, right? Like he probably got whacked in the head. He fell off a horse.
Yeah, yeah. He was leeched a lot and they bled him, and now he's like, I'm gonna fuck things up.
Like, maybe his brain wasn't affected by the fall from a horse, but I'm just saying that it seems pretty likely. So around this time, he starts to get really obsessed with trying to figure out, like, now hold on a second. The Old Testament, God is connecting with Israel. Uh-huh. He's working with Israel. But then the New Testament, he's talking about the church and the connection there.
Yes.
So is the contract with the Israelites moot now that the church is happening?
That's always been a weird shift in the Bible.
Yeah. So this is where all the weird shit with evangelicals and Jewish people starts to, like, happen.
Okay.
Starts to percolate here. Because Darby can't understand, like, how he's supposed to, you know, hold both of these things at the same time, that God has made these promises to Christians, but he's also made these promises to the Jewish people. So he comes up with he gets involved with this group called the Plymouth Brethren.
Who, sick name.
Very, very cool. but it's interesting because, like, this is where some of the things that Darby was into caught on and some didn't.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that did not catch on as much is that the Plymouth Brethren were like, there actually should not be hierarchy in the church. There shouldn't be, like, a priest or a pastor. Everyone. So they were more on the, isn't that what, not the Amish, oh my God, what am I saying? Quakers are kind of like, you just speak, like, at your meeting.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they were very, like, they thought that having, like, that structure was inherently corrupting.
Got it.
So.
They were right.
They were right. So like, that's the thing, like, some, you know, obviously too, like, not like the Catholic Church is a saint, like, so there's a little bit of, like, weirdness there of, like, Darby, like, being like, this system's fucked up. I don't want to be part of this system where I'm like,
go off,
queen, I get you. That makes sense. But the other shit, not so much.
Okay.
And I'll say too, so Darby, you know, became involved with the Plymouth Brethren, like, and the ideas that the Plymouth Brethren and that Darby were espousing did not catch on so much in Europe, but they very much did in America.
Because we're a nation of sick freaks.
We are a nation of, like, honestly, this is truly my conspiracy theory / just theory, is that America was founded on, like, Puritan, like, wackos, and that's why we are the way we
are. Isn't that just fact?
I think it's just really literally true. So what actually is dispensationalism?
America is just, like, religious sickos and indentured servants and
And really slaves, rich people. Obviously. Slaves, but also slaveholders.
Slaveholders.
So we've got our different, exactly.
The East India Company just being like, we need to set up a business, which is why QAnon is correct when they say that America is just a business and they're going to annul our contract. That will happen.
Yeah, the sovereign citizens are correct in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So let's get a little bit into what this, you know, belief system, dispensationalism is. You're going to feel very smart when you get done with this.
Yeah.
And also you're going to be like, what the fuck? This is so stupid.
Prepare to be the most annoying person at any party after this.
So dispensationalism, when you drill down, is the idea that God deals with different groups differently. He deals with each dispensation in a specific way. So he came up with an idea of 7 dispensations. I'm not going to tell you, like, the dates of everything, but I will read the names of them out to you because it's like, yeah, this is some real, like, evangelical bullshit. So there's 7 actually, Tim, can you read what our 7 dispensations are?
Okay. Here are the 7 dispensations, gang. Innocence, conscience, human government, promise, law, grace, In Kingdom, I know less now than I did 2 seconds ago.
Well, the important thing you need to know,
like, what is dispensation? What's a dispensation? Like, I googled it, and the Oxford Dictionary says it's a noun, so we're loving that.
Yeah.
Exemption from a rule or unusual requirement. So, like,
so Tim,
you can't get drafted because you're flat-footed. So Tim, that's dispensation.
I think it's really funny that you just keyed in on that, too, because when I was doing my initial research, I also went off on a whole, like, because dispensation means, like, four different things. Mm. Like, dig in a little deeper into the different...
A system of order, government, organization of a... No, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
So it's either a government or the way you get out of being drafted in the Vietnam War.
Well, but it kind of is. Basically, but think of it as like a contract almost. Like,
gotcha.
In this era from, you know,
so yeah,
the birth of Christ till 50 AD, we're in this dispensation. This is the way that God like deals with those people.
So like one dispensation is like if you have flat feet. You're treated like this, but if the...
But it's time. It's all time. Mm-hmm. So, like, for instance,
okay.
Like, law, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, law is, like, Old Testament. So, like, they had to follow the law in order to get to heaven.
I don't want
to
be rude, but why is law number five?
Because so innocence is like Adam and Eve. That's the very first one.
How are they innocent? They talk to God.
They
That's
were,
not fair.
They were, but they were innocent. They didn't know about sin. They didn't know about nudity, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, so two conscious is like post-Apple.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
exactly.
Then and somewhere then, between two and three, all of Adam and Eve's children fuck each other.
Yes.
And we get human government.
Yes. And then promise is where they sort of be like, there will be a Messiah.
So that's Old Testament.
Yeah. And law is also still Old Testament.
Promise is like... Pre-Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Got
maybe,
it.
I don't know. Honestly, again, it doesn't really matter that much. Just the key thing, though.
How dare you?
Well, if you want to go into one of your
Five and six seem to be the important parts.
Five and six are the important parts because, remember, seven is kingdom. We're not there yet. That's the millennium.
That's the
millennium. That's going to happen.
That's the juiciness. That's the, exactly. The rapture, the apocalypse, yada, yada, yada.
But what John Nelson Darby, like, the way that he realized he could, like, make this work is like, oh, so the Jewish people are under the law dispensation. Mm. Like they, like God promised them that he would always take care of them. Like, and all those promises still hold. But also Jesus came and died on the cross for our sins. So people can just get saved and be straight to God. But that doesn't negate the contract that God made with the Jewish people.
So in his mind, does that mean that Jewish people still go to heaven because they're under their own dispensation? Or is this a whole different, like, this is why before they could go to heaven and now they can't?
I think it's a little wibbly-wobbly.
Okay.
And they're honestly, like, I think that once...
The horse pills didn't quite hit him that hard.
No, so no yeah, exactly, up. Exactly, yeah. But I think it's more that, like, once the rapture happens and the tribulation starts... Then it's like, okay, well, you got to get saved now if you're still hanging around. And that's the whole, remember, like the 144,000 converts, yeah, blah, yeah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that's how that all ends up working out. So the dispensation idea is obviously like the main part of like what gives dispensationalism its name. Mm-hmm. But there are many other pieces of it that are like, this is what most dispensationalists believe.
Yeah, it was interesting because we're talking about it in our Patreon Discord. And some people asking, like, what is dispensationalism? And shout out to Bapperson in the Discord, who knows a ton about all this stuff.
And yeah, Bapperson's been with us in the dispensationalism mind.
Yes, and it's kind of funny because I was basically just be like, yeah, it just means they believe in the left behind bullshit. And then Bapperson basically laid out all the shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't see the rapture in here. So it's super interesting that that's – that might not be what it is, but that's what it means, depending on
that's exactly,
who you're talking to.
Well, that's the thing, because it's funny, because it's like, well, no one at, like, your average Baptist church knows really what dispensationalism is.
No one would
is.
Say, yeah, people that believe 110% the left behind breakdown, most of them are not going to say they're dispensationalists.
No, they don't even know what that fucking means. Because that's the thing. Like, this is, like, the general framework that sets it up, but they're just caring about the end result of it.
Got it.
So
that's so fucking weird.
Yeah, exactly.
How did this get through other than like this?
But here's the reason.
I'm getting mad.
No, I know. And we're going to get into it because there is a reason why it became so popular. Because, I mean, remember earlier.
It's an answer, right?
It's an answer. And there are other reasons for it. But like the whole thing of like.
And it's just true.
And it's just literally going to happen. But no, like the whole thing of like, oh, we don't have to worry about like, oh, these specific historical events need to happen before God comes back. I could just be like, God could come back any day.
Yeah.
People like that.
Yeah.
People latch onto it.
So, I mean, It's kind of interesting to think about because this happened in the year sometime between, you know, the year 1800 and then horse accident in 1827 or whatever.
Yeah.
But this vague vibe of like the historical connection to how fucked everything on the planet was.
Oh my God. Absolutely. It's and so deeply connected.
Like I'm
to
listening
that.
To the Chapo Trap House Hell on Earth series. Which is basically just about, you know, Protestants and Catholics killing each other, aka the 30 Years' War.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me the fact that, like, you would be a Protestant in, like, Prague, and then if, like, a Catholic, you would just kill all your Catholic neighbors.
Yeah.
Because you're so, so scared about your soul that the
you're like, I've gotta do it.
I gotta purge them, yada, yada, yada. And I, obviously that still happened and happens, but I wouldn't doubt that this vibe of like God will take care of this eased a little bit of the tensions and probably 17 other reasons too.
I actually like my I had one of those like what I could only describe as like galaxy brain moments when I was reading the beginning of the book that I'm talking about in this, because I was also listening to the Chopper Trap House, you know, series on the 30-year war, and it was so exactly like working with each other. I just felt like every like neuron in my brain was like firing at once, like, yes, this is good shit. So I recommend listening to that. It's interesting. It's not like really, it doesn't get into dispensationalist stuff, but it does.
They get into Quakers.
It gives a lot of context for the earlier stuff, which I don't get into. Again, like really what I'm talking about starts in 1800s, but there's a lot of really interesting shit before that. Like, like Martin Luther, like he was like, I don't even think Revelation should be in the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it.
He like literally, like I think that's so funny because I think if you go to your average Baptist church, they'd be like, oh yeah, Martin Luther, we love that guy. The 95 Theses, you know, fuck the Catholic Church.
Yeah, fuck him.
And it's like, yeah, he thought Revelation was like bad. He did not think that Christians like needed to be thinking about that shit.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super like historic about all this stuff. And it's also somewhat helpful as someone that lives in 2023 to kind of zoom out a little bit, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, to be like, and, wait, yeah, how did this happen?
Because, like, all the shit could not have happened without Martin Luther. This very specific aspect of it couldn't happen without whatever you said is Darby.
John Nelson Darby.
Darby Allen.
God, I wish it was Darby Allen. Better.
And, you know, it makes me feel a little bit better because, to some extent, like, I don't think we can attribute the people stop murdering each other in Christianity the same way.
No.
To him, but like, it's kind of interesting to think that like this helped and it, for the next 200 years, it helped everyone kind of cool off. And then 100 years later, something else will happen. Now, obviously it's not him. But I'm, but part of my brain is like, did this person do more good? Because you're not gonna, there's not gonna be a guy that comes up and be like, hey guys, check it out. The Bible's fake and shit. That they're not, that's not gonna take seed in the 1800s.
Kind of. So this is, so this taking hold actually is somewhat of a backlash against people starting to be like, let's examine the Bible in a historical way. And like, oh, maybe this was not like literally true, but is, you know, an allegory or whatever. Like looking at the Bible in a historic way, like, it became popular partially because people were like, I don't like that. I want to think the supernatural shit is happening.
Got it.
So the key beliefs that dispensationalists, like, other than the whole, like, weird dispensation thing, which, again, doesn't really, like, have any impact on the day-to-day. It more just gives the kind of, like, framework for everything. But the main things that dispensationalists believe are, number one, most important, literal interpretation of Scripture, including Old Testament prophecy. And they believe that everything in the New Testament reaffirms messages from the Old Testament. So this is where we start to get some like, ooh, the way that Christians like interact with Jewish people and Jewish texts is fucked. Because they're like, oh yeah, your little texts, well, ours like carried them to the future and they're actually correct.
Right.
And yours are,
you're the,
like,
you're the prequel.
You're the prequel. Exactly. And actually even like the Torah and the Old Testament, like the translations are different too. Like there's differences there. So
that's fun.
Yeah. But when dispensationalists, when evangelicals are talking about a literal interpretation of Scripture, they basically are saying that if it is at all possible to take something literally, take it literally.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay.
Like, if, you know, like, they're talking about obviously like allegorical stuff, that's fine. And they are like, well, Revelation is obviously referring to future things. But that's a whole conversation too. There was a lot of really intense debate in the church, like throughout centuries, of is Revelation talking about something that's already happened? Mm-hmm. Is Revelation talking about something that will happen in our time? Is Revelation talking about something that's happening in the future? Dispensationalists believe that essentially everything in Revelation, except for like the very, very beginning where they're talking about those specific churches, mm-hmm. is in the future.
Interesting.
Is stuff in the future.
That sounds like a future bonus episode.
Yeah. Oh my God. That, again, very difficult to get into this because I just keep like researching. I'm like, oh my God, I accidentally have written like 20 pages.
That's the problem is there's so many different branches in the interesting thing of like, because this isn't a what do people believe about Revelation.
No. This is like, how did we get the left behind?
Yeah.
So in addition to literal interpretation of scripture, as I have been talking about, a very big distinction between Israel / Jewish people and the church. Like, and it's a very big focus on like ethnic national Israel versus the church, aka Christians. And in their mind, the church began in the book of Acts. Cause like, wasn't that like a big thing probably for you, like growing up? Like, oh, like the Acts was, you know, the book of Acts details like the early church. This is like the beginning of the church.
Now, I've completely blanked. What is Acts?
The book of Acts?
Yeah. Is it Old Testament or New Testament?
New Testament. That's where like,
Acts feels like an Old Testament name.
Like Ananias and Sapphira, you know, like Paul doing shit. That's all the early church shit.
Yeah, I would agree to that. I guess the thing that like fucked me up later is like everything in the Bible is like 80 years after Jesus died. That's not true, but like.
Well, it's in
like,
the New Testament. Yeah. You're not super wrong.
It actually is about 80 years.
It pretty much is correct.
Everything that's written. Yeah. Yeah. So basically what I'm saying, like, the addendum we're doing here is that a lot of the Bible is written secondhand, not by the actual Marks, Lukes, and Johns.
Yes.
That was about 80 years after, give or take, 30.
Yeah, exactly. So, literal interpretation of scripture, distinction between Israel and the church, and then they believe in a rapture. And that this is like,
I mean,
different.
Interesting. I think there's something different between Israel and the church. Feels like Israel, per the Bible, is just.
It's kind of logical. Like, of course he's going to keep his promises. Right. Well, he's not going to break his promise.
They say sometimes in what I like to refer to as the Old Testament as the someone's coming. And I do sort of forget now.
Messiah.
Okay. Messiah?
No, it's the Hebrew word. Yeah.
So, like, that's what we definitely latched onto. And I haven't really, like, sifted through the memory cortex to be like, what part of the Old Testament actually says Jesus is coming versus do we pick and choose?
Yeah, so Isaiah and Daniel are the big, like, areas that have, like, prophetic. I think there's some other ones, too. Again, this is, like, a whole other, like, episode we can get into.
Weird, when they're in captivity. I don't know about Isaiah.
Well, Isaiah was, too, I believe, which goes to what I was saying at the beginning of the episode, which is apocalyptic thinking is always like super rampant when shit is bad.
Same with witch burnings.
I mean, yeah. And actually, a thing that I studied in undergrad was Zoroastrianism, which heavily influenced Judaism.
It's the OG.
Well, it is, because that's like actually where some of these like apocalyptic ideas. Maybe we'll do a whole other episode on like apocalyptic literature, because I think it's so interesting.
I want to give it up for Zoroastrians.
Dude, again, don't even get me started. I wrote a whole paper about Zoroastrianism in undergrad.
We should find some of your papers.
And it got published.
That's why we told our parents Jennifer couldn't take my last name.
Yeah, because I had already published papers under my name in an academic journal that like nobody will read.
Don't belittle yourself, Queen. Also, we just didn't give a shit, but
still. Yeah, we didn't really give a shit. But so I honestly think that paper was good, and I actually might even have it.
That feels like good Patreon content.
Yeah, I'll
Jennifer
have to
reads
dig
her
it
entire
up
paper as I laugh and we clink our
dude,
cocktail glasses.
Like, honestly, like my undergrad thesis, like every now and then I'll like end up like going to look at it, and I'm like, It's pretty good.
I fucking rock.
Yeah.
Okay, so continue. This is super interesting to me.
Okay, so yeah. So literal interpretation for dispensationalism, literal interpretation of scripture, distinction between Israel and the church, belief in the rapture that is separate from the second coming of Christ, because that's the whole thing, is like Jesus is going to suck all the Christians up to heaven, 7-year tribulation, then the real second coming of Christ. Because Jesus doesn't come down for the rapture. He just sucks up to heaven.
Yeah, I've
and
heard.
And then Jesus comes back.
I've heard that he like comes into our atmosphere, is like, what's up? And we see like a shimmer.
Right, you see like a little shimmer and then he goes back up. So you don't really see him. Connected to that, the rapture, and then they believe in premillennialism, which is a future 1,000-year reign of Christ.
So everything after, or everything about the end times here, that seems like new good shit.
Mm-hmm.
But was that maybe this is like the rest of the episode, but like, is that something that existed before that they are now putting together?
That is, so the idea of like a rapture versus like the millennium is starting, that's new here.
Okay.
That's like where Darby, Plymouth Brethren are coming up with that ship.
Interesting.
Yeah. So again, this is – so Darby coming from Ireland / England, 1800s. But what happened – well, actually, sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself really quick. So what other parts of Darby's ideas are popular? Because again, I think I want to stress that people did not just say, oh, John Nelson Darby, you're like my new preacher. I'm going to believe everything you believe. Because they didn't, because when Darby was like, I don't think there should be hierarchy in churches, they were like, fuck that. We don't care. We don't care about that part.
We
only care about the part about a rapture because that sounds cool.
So he's probably like writing pamphlets and shit like that.
Well, what was actually happening was he came to America and preached extensively. And there were all these like weird little like conferences happening.
Oh, weird.
Cause you know, 1800s, like nothing the fuck is going on. So they'd be like, we're gonna hold an event. Like,
they're like, the Civil War is gonna start soon. We got a couple years to fill.
Yeah. Well, I think this is actually maybe later. I think he didn't come to America. Well, I think we'll get to that in the notes. So let me sit back for a second.
The Civil War just happened. We don't have anything else going on.
We don't have anything going on. So time to get really wild about the return of Jesus Christ. But like I said, the thing that really caught on about Darby's ideas, people loved the idea of an imminent return of Jesus Christ. And I don't know about you, Tim, but like that was such a present thing in my family and like around like people that I knew growing up. They'd be like, oh, well, Jesus could come back at any time. And like, oh, if he doesn't take us, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like people like that idea.
They love it. Yeah.
In the same way that I'm like, maybe if shit gets really bad, the Vulcans will come and make first contact with us.
Yeah.
And like fix our problems.
It's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
If everything's so bad.
Seriously, you look around the world, everything's fucking shit, and you're like, but God's gonna take me up.
Because
to heaven.
We're talking about the church in like, you know, in Acts was like absolute, like
they actually were persecuted.
I even heard that like the disciples were like, Jesus is coming back, baby.
Oh, no, absolutely.
He's going to rapture
they
us.
They thought that was happening like in their generation.
Yeah.
And thus all the issues going forward, because this is the thing, and this is what I couldn't stop thinking about while I was researching and like working on this. It's like, this is just QAnon again.
They're baking.
They're baking. They're like, oh, my prediction didn't work. Well, I have a reason for why that prediction didn't work, actually. I miscalculated or like, or I'm just going to ignore it. And I don't care.
I've never thought of it that way of like, just the idea of, because it sounds like they would just, one, they're getting murdered all over the goddamn place. So they had to hide.
Because they were a minority group that was like, we should give to the poor and like, fuck other gods. And the Romans were like, we don't like that.
Yeah.
You guys are causing problems.
You guys are so far away. So we have
to. You're actually very annoying.
You're
so
very.
We're going to fucking kill you.
The Visigoths were like kind of focused on. So we're just going to murder you guys. No big deal.
Yeah.
But like, they're just probably talking all day.
Yeah.
And then like 80 years later, one of the kids that was in there was like, oh yeah, this is what Mark said. So Mark was probably just like going off and like, yeah, I know I said that Jesus is coming back. I'm his brother, I think, or that. And then James is like, I think that's me. And like, started arguing, not important, but like, it just blows my mind. Cause it feels like when we see like Christian movies and stuff like that, everything they say is scripture.
Yes.
So you see Jesus just be like, give to Caesar what is Caesar.
Yeah.
And shit like that. But Jesus probably said a whole bunch of shit. Like, he had to talk. He had to, like, well, much like a podcaster, he had to fill that air.
Oh my God, absolutely. And again, can we just bring up that Jesus was like a dude hanging out with 12 guys and like washing their feet?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So, you know.
What's the big deal? Okay.
Jesus is probably gay.
Jesus hung out with sex workers.
He did hang out with sex workers. That's
and
true.
husky fishermen. Yeah. Why so many fishermen? Not important. Please
probably
continue.
Because Jesus is a homosexual. but no, it's, yeah, I think that the fact that Christianity started as a very minority, like, persecuted religion is very interesting. And our common day, which is very much not persecuted, but they still carry that, like, I'm persecuted. It's like, well, that is
we
how you're
fed to lions.
That's how your shit started, but it's not been that way for quite some time. So, as I said, the whole Jesus coming back without, like, specific historical events having to happen first, very popular. And like I was talking about earlier, too, like, according to Darby, most of Revelation, the book of Revelation, is talking about shit that hasn't happened yet. There's a lot of different ideas about, like, what Revelation is and means, and, like, whether it was, like, oh, this is written for the early church about a specific thing, or, oh, no, this is all an allegory, like, it's whatever.
It's Nero.
Or it's just about the general concept of struggling, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right. I know you're being murdered everywhere, guys, but check this fan fiction out.
But to Darby, he's like, no, 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 this is prophecy. This will happen in the future. So, how did these ideas get to America, though? So, before dispensationalism became popular in America, the most prominent framework that most Americans believed in was postmillennialism. And actually, Tim, can you read this quote from The Last Days Are Here Again, A History of the End Times?
I would love to. On the whole, this strand of millennialism lacked apocalyptic qualities. It did not see the world ending anytime soon. Rather, the gospel would penetrate society and life on earth would gradually improve until Christ returned. That's interesting.
This was fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the key difference between, like, your current, like, dispensationalist folks and people who don't think that way. Dispensationalism is inherently pessimistic. They're like, shit's not going to get better.
That's fascinating, yeah. That's
it's
true.
Only going to get worse.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, like, and it makes so much sense.
It does
the
make
way
so much
that
sense.
People are acting now, because they're like, well, there's no point to save the earth. It's going to be destroyed. Who could fucking care?
Yeah.
Versus before, people were like, well, we're improving as a society, and eventually we'll just keep improving and improving until God's like, I'll come back because you guys have figured it out.
There's a reason to strive for better because we'll eventually hit this version of Nirvana.
Versus dispensationalists are like, they need it to be bad. They need the world to be bad.
I don't like this.
Yeah.
Anymore. Everything I said about this being good, I'm
no,
taking
it's very
back.
Bad.
I'm taking that back, actually.
So, keep throwing isms and ists and blah, blah, blah. Fundamentalism is a different concept than dispensational, very connected, but fundamentalism is that, like, we're reading the Bible and it's plain text, we're only going by what the word says, we're not going by history, blah, 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 blah. So in the late 1800s, you know, you're seeing a lot of progress, like, in philosophy and like psychology mm-hmm. and medicine and science, like, you know, the concept of like evolution like becomes a thing. Like yeah. there starts to become a lot more science. So you have the people, the mainline Protestants who are like, yes, we will continue to like be Christian, but we're going to look at it from like a historic way and like, you know, academically. Mm-hmm. And then you have the people that are like, fuck that shit. That's not what my Bible says.
Right.
So you get that reactionary. Like, so there's the fundamentalism shit, like the strain going because of like, oh, like progress is happening, you know?
Like, yeah.
Evolution like exists.
Industrial revolution.
You know, like, you know, we're automation.
We're jumping leaps and bounds from where we were before.
Exactly. So
we discovered oil.
So you kind of have those two, like, we're looking forward to the future and like, we don't like this future that's going on.
Interesting. My name's Rockefeller and I'm trying to get my money now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to read a quote quickly from the book. But while fundamentalism is primarily a religious phenomenon, it can also be seen as a social reaction to the forces of modern, urbanized, industrialized America. Fundamentalism's confrontational approach to the modern world has promoted an apocalyptic outlook within its ranks. So again, back to lots of shit is changing and people are like, oh fuck, I'm stressed. Everything's changing.
Jesus Christ.
We must be entering the end of the world.
Which kind of makes me feel less bad now.
Exactly.
We're compressing all this shit over the course of like, oh, before you experienced this 8 times. Well, before you didn't experience it, your grandparents did, and then your great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren did. Now, us living today, we experience it every 3 days.
Yes.
Type shit.
Yes. It's like the human mind is not meant to deal with this, like, rate of change.
Yeah.
So, from about 1859 to 1872, John Nelson Darby is like, how about I go preach in America?
Was he like getting persecuted at all?
No, people love that shit. Like it was
in Europe.
I think it was. He was invited to America.
He's like, I'm trying to get paid.
Well, because they again, like I was saying, shit's boring mm-hmm. in the 1800s. So they'd be like, we're having a conference about prophetic things or whatever.
Yeah.
So he just, you know, he came. He'd like tour around, like speak at the conferences, speak at different churches, like whatever. And
the idea of like a religious conference, like a
here's
your
lot.
Name badge.
Yes.
You know, here's your goodie bag.
Oh my god, they were doing it so
that's
much.
Cool.
That's a whole other area that I would love to do more research into. Honestly, that's why like you can just imagine me. You guys know me. Getting a little bit high and like researching and being like, oh my god. And I haven't even gotten into the thing that I really want to go off on. We're about to get into it soon. But yeah, like the 1800s, there were a lot of different like kind of like academic religious conferences. So he starts to speak like fairly like often. Like
I would kill to be able to see what this looked like.
Oh my god, absolutely. Like really, really interesting. So the ideas that he is bringing start to kind of catch on in America. But I want to again stress, it wasn't like people listened to Darby talk and were like, we're following Darby. They're like, we like your ideas about the whole like rapture shit. Your stuff about the churches, we don't care about that. So we're going to ignore that. Then another, so I almost see this, think of this as like different vectors like going out and like spreading this.
Like The Last of Us.
I mean, yeah, honestly, yes. So John Nelson Darby is one doing his little preaching in America. Then you might recognize his name. Dwight Moody. Does that ring a bell to you?
Moody Institute of Bible, baby.
Yep. So Dwight Moody was a evangelist that was very popular in the late 1800s. And so this is the thing too, because like some of this is very, it's decentralized. It's not like there's a group of people that are like, we are trying to make this spread.
Because if they would have followed Darby, it sounds like it would have been a cult and fizzled out.
Right, but that's not what happened.
But instead, everyone's going to these conferences and being like,
I like that idea. Yeah.
I'm going to take it back.
Exactly. I'm going to spread it. I'm going to teach it at my church. So Dwight Moody picks up this idea about the pre-millennial return of Christ, which again, remember before, it used to be the thought that, Christ will come back and immediately set up his 1,000-year reign on earth versus what Darby proposed was that there's a rapture and then after that.
And we're nowhere near the 7 years. Like,
to them, they're saying we could be. God could come back at any time.
Well, no, I mean, like, in the math. There's, like, it doesn't sound like what you're saying is the tribulation is happening. It's like either A, Jesus shows up, or B, we kind of, like, evolve.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. So in the two different concepts.
Yeah.
For the people who believe in the idea of a rapture, they think it could happen at any time.
So now, like, we're moving Jesus, well, maybe even from coming back at all to point blank coming back, mm-hmm. and so that's what we have now.
Yeah. Dwight Moody starts, you know.
I hate him.
Well, you're going to get it some more. So Dwight Moody starts preaching about the premillennial return of Christ, and a lot of other evangelists start catching on. Like, evangelism becomes, like, a big thing. Again, remember, they didn't have shit to do back then. So it's like, yeah, the preacher, this guy's going to come talk. We're going to go listen to him.
Yeah.
Then this is the part that I really could have got, and I hopefully will do a whole episode on this. Then came the Scofield Reference Bible. Does this ring a bell to you, Tim?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. So this is, like, very much an established thing. So it was first published in 1909. So now we're bringing ourselves into the 20th century, mm-hmm. from the 1800s to the 1900s. Cyrus Ingerson Scofield
invented spicy food.
The Scofield scale of spicy end times and peppers. But no, he was the person who drafted the Scofield Reference Bible. And my dude, straight up a grifter from what I can tell.
King.
Like, it's actually really funny.
King.
He abandoned his wife and child and was imprisoned for forgery. And that's when he had his quote-unquote conversion.
I'm gonna say it again, King. You know, don't tie him down is what I say.
So, again, he was not, like, really a trained minister. He was, like, something. I don't even know what he did before. But while he was in prison, he was like, I've decided to become a minister.
Professional huckster.
He is a professional huckster. I found the funniest website of this, like, one, like, kind of, like, researcher, like, maybe minister kind of guy, but, like, obviously had, like, academic training, mm-hmm. and he had a fucking vendetta against Cyrus Ingerson Scofield. He was like, this man is a grifter. He's a liar. And so I really almost, like, went down a hole, like, just talking to this guy.
It feels like all of this stuff are the Jenga pieces to our modern day. So 100%. I guess I kind of gotta give it up to folks being like, well, no, Scofield fucking sucks, but it's like, dude, what else is, like, based off Scofield?
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I think that the thing that really, like, makes my brain explode is how these really tiny choices have ripple effects.
Yeah, it's, like, crazy
across history. The reason why the Scofield Reference Bible became so influential is because he was the first person to, like, make notes, like, on the same page of the Bible.
Interesting.
So it'd be like, you know, like a little, like, postscript, like, note one, and you'd go down and see his notes. So people couldn't remember what's from the Bible and what's from Scofield's notes.
Huh.
So they're like, this is real. This is what the Bible says. It's like, no, that's what Scofield said in his notes of the Bible that you read.
King?
Yeah. Tim, can you actually read this quote from the book,
please? I would love to. Scofield placed his notes and biblical text on the same page. As a result, his comments often acquired the authority of Scripture, capital S. Readers often failed to remember where the first encounter of a particular idea in Scofield's notes or in the biblical texts. Cool.
Yeah. So the first version of the Scofield Reference Bible comes out in 1909. They do another version of it, I think, about 10 years.
So this is like them just, like, reading Twitter, aka the Bible, and be like, I read an article.
And they're like, yeah, and, like, I think it means this.
But it's like, no, you read Scofield being like, this is big if true.
And Scofield had picked up and absorbed through, you know, various ways, mm-hmm. this whole dispensation, because it had started to become more popular, because people like Dwight Moody and other evangelists were preaching it.
I assume Darby's dead at this point.
I'm pretty sure he is. So that's, I kind of thought of it as, like, there's the aural, like, A-U-R-A-L. Is there a better way to say that word? It's not oral. Aural. Like, through your ear. So there's like, people auditory. Speaking. There's auditory vector, and there's a written vector. So the auditory vector is all the evangelists speaking.
The first one is oral and oral.
It's oral and oral. So there's the oral vector of people preaching, and then there's the written vector of Scofield Reference Bible. And if, like, you're a family, like, I'm pretty sure – I don't know if we had a Scofield. There's another one of those reference Bibles like that, that mm-hmm. we had. Like, so you're hearing it when you're going to, you know, your various, like, revival events,
yeah.
tent events. That was a whole thing that was going on too. And then you also have it in your home Bible, like, oh, we have the Scofield reference Bible to help us understand the Bible. It says this, so we should follow it. So that starts to trickle out from there. At this point, once the Scofield Bible starts to kind of pop off, other things start to pop off in the world, such as World War One.
Yeah, I feel like the first 20 years, something big happens.
Yeah. And again, so in the world, if you're a dispensationalist and you know, like, okay, there's – God's got, like, his contract with Christians, mm-hmm. but he's also got his shit with Israel and, mm-hmm. like, what's going on there. If you're a person who kind of believes these things – and the Balfour Declaration of 1917 happens? That is crazy. So the Balfour Declaration is a public statement by the British government during World War One, announcing their support for the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. So this, like, sets off everything. They're like, oh, fuck, it's starting to happen. Because in their minds, they're like, well, God is having, you know, this connection with Israel, he's going to bring them back to their mm-hmm. homeland, and that's what's going to pop off and start the end times.
Interesting.
And there's a war, and there's World War One happening.
And there's, like, the worst war.
The worst war that has ever happened. So that's where, like, the people that are alive in this time period, I kind of get why you'd be like, I guess prophecies are coming true now.
Yeah, shout out to World War One folks. That guys do deserve to believe you're in the end times.
World War One was so bad, and like so like on a completely different scale than anything before that.
Yeah, first modern war.
I mean, it was crazy. So yeah, so but at this point, still
motherfuckers rolled out on horses with bright ass red coats as motherfuckers are like, yeah. I'm gonna bomb you from mile away.
We have the technologies now. So, but at this point still, dispensationalism is still pretty confined to evangelicals. And evangelicals are not a huge slice of Christians in America.
Interesting.
At this point. See, isn't that funny to think about? Because mm-hmm. in my mind, I'm like, there's always been this many.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
that's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you'll hear people talk about mainline Protestants. That's your, you know, your Lutherans, like your Methodists, like, you know, the normal ones.
The cool guys.
So at this point, evangelicals are still a pretty small slice of Christians in America. So we know now that's not the case. So how the fuck?
How did we get here?
Did it become so prominent? Tim, can you please read this quote?
How did dispensationalism come out of its subculture into the national spotlight? Most obvious is the use of modern media. The premillennialists became masters of TikTok.
And no, it doesn't say that!
The premillennialists became masters of mass communication. They skillfully expressed their views to a popular audience through mass market TikToks.
No!
Paperbacks, radio, television, movies, and video cassettes.
Doesn't that make you just feel sick?
I don't understand what this means. I don't like to see it.
What they mean is that literally they just got the fucking message out. They were like, oh, we can communicate with people via the radio.
Yeah.
We can communicate via TV, via paperback books, via movies, via television, via, like, order from home VHSs. They saw that
so
early.
Are they, like, selling stuff? Like,
yes.
Ye old timey, like, get your ether tinctures, but
no,
also buy your...
Not, like, not connected, I don't think. It's more just that, like, again, remembering that, like, what do people have to do for fucking entertainment?
Yeah, so maybe they're at a conference and like, take my paper, you can record here's my whatever the fuck I'm listening to.
And remember, this is like a
the first podcasters.
This is looking back from a little bit later. So this is like in the time period. Like this is not like just like 1918. This is like up through like the 1990s.
Yeah.
Like evangelical Christians in this vein, they knew how to use, you know, mass media.
Was there, from your research, was there a tipping point where it became subculture to culture?
So I think that after World War II, it really – and then like the 60s, 70s, like that was when it – 60s, 70s is when it really like exploded. But after World War II is when it started to spread a little bit more, I think. Another important, I keep using like vector because I do mean it. I'm not even joking because again, even in the book, he talks about how like this like end times hysteria is like a virus. Like sure. It is.
Sure.
And again, I keep drawing connections to QAnon because it's the same shit. Like, oh, like some people think about it and it catches on and it really is like a virus. So another vector in addition to modern media was Dallas Theological Seminary. So a lot of the big names that you know, like Hal Lindsey, who was like one of the big dudes who popularized, he wrote a book called Late Great Planet Earth. That was like one of the big tipping points of getting people to be like, oh, there's going to be a rapture. There's okay. An end times, blah, okay. blah, blah. He went to Dallas Theological Seminary. So there's all these preachers, teachers going to Dallas Theological Seminary, learning about dispensationalism, and then spreading it to yeah. the congregation.
Yeah, definitely.
It was even in the book that I was reading, someone called Dallas Theological Seminary the Vatican of the dispensationalist movement.
Okay.
So it really is. It's like a very much a hotbed of what's going on there. So we've got all general mass media, like your mm-hmm. radio, mm-hmm. like all that shit's going on, all the different people going to Dallas, you know, Theological Seminary, and then
right.
disseminating that to their congregations. Then you have in the 60s and 70s the whole moral majority bullshit.
Yeah.
So that's where the evangelicals became connected with the Republicans.
Cool.
And results in people like Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, Tim LaHaye. And so all of those people, it's like ramping up
ugh.
Until this time period. So Hal Lindsey, as I said, Dallas Theological Seminary graduate, wrote in 1970 the book The Late Great Planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that like really spurred people on to being like, oh shit, prophecy's cool as hell.
Yeah.
Like, what's up with yeah. prophecy?
Yeah. I mean, I get it, right? Like, we are starting to have technology and the yeah. fact that like we can think about the end of the world and all that stuff. Very sci-fi.
And speaking of that, that's also the general time period that threat of nuclear war becomes a huge
issue.
True. So again, everyone's getting up to this fever pitch of fear about like, oh my God, we could literally, the world could end.
Yeah.
We can explode each other. which is interesting because if you're a dispensationalist, you're like, but we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to be snatched away before everything gets really bad.
Right.
We don't care about what happens to the Earth. You guys can do your nuclear holocaust. We're going to be in heaven.
Yeah.
There's literally a quote from Jerry Falwell that just like absolutely like slapped me in the face that feels like it explains so much of what's going on in politics now. He said, "We see no hope in politics, in the business world, in education, in the world of medicine, but there is hope and it is in the second coming of Christ."
Cool.
Yeah. So it's like, this is why the right wing does not fucking care about climate change, why they don't care about, you know, Norfolk Southern fucking crashing their trains and like poisoning everything.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, we don't care about the world because we're going to heaven and then God's going to
like. And in fact, the more bullshit that happens on the planet is going to bring the rapture sooner.
It's going to bring the rapture sooner and also punish all those non-Christians. Yep, fuck them. They're going to get a fucked up Earth. We don't care.
Me being a Christian billionaire poisoning their water, they deserve it because they're not Christians.
Yes.
Even though I've killed an entire youth group or something like that.
Yes. So all that to say, dispensationalism specifically is like a very specific thing that only started in the 1800s. But the whole idea of like end times, like infecting, that's happened forever.
Mm-hmm.
The whole cycles of like getting into a fervor about the end times, like that just happens over and over and over again. But the idea of dispensationalism, that is new. So I think that's where like trying to like find that like fine line between like, yeah, the concept of the Antichrist has existed for a long time.
Right.
That's not a new concept. It's just that the way that Left Behind presents it is very new. And I think because there's enough overlap of stuff that's been around for a long time with this new stuff, people think, oh, this has always been around.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's not.
Or, you know, the more charitable version of it, which I don't think is what they think, is like, oh, it's always been this way, but now we are more evolved.
Yeah.
Not evolved. I would never say evolved. We have learned more based off our study and, you know, our patience and our faith. We now know today is the peak of the knowledge. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine any Christian is going to be like, oh, well, in 20 years, we'll probably think different because we'll learn more.
No.
My assumption is like, I bet everyone's always like, no, this is the end.
This is the farthest we've ever taken it.
Exactly. And there's nothing past this.
So I wanted to kind of wrap up the episode with pulling it back and why does this matter? As I said, the book that I read came out in 1998. And as I was reading it, I thought it was really interesting because they said public opinion polls in the 90s said that from 40 to 60 Americans pay some attention to prophecies. So I was like, okay, surely it's like not that much now, right? In 2023. So I did some research and I found a Pew article from December 2022 that said 39% of adults in America believe we are living in the end times. That's 2022.
And that's not even like believing in a hint of prophecy. It's like,
No.
Not only is prophecy real,
we think
but we're
there.
Living
in, essentially 40% of America thinks we're living in the end times. Like, and 63% of evangelicals think we're living in the end times. Evangelicals are, I believe this is still true, the largest Christian subset.
Cool.
And Christian, 70% of America's, 70% of Americans identify as Christian. So I think that can tell you this is a problem. This is a lot of people that believe this. And then even more disturbing, and this is a thing that the writer talks about in the book a lot that I love, they are a cognitive minority. They are very powerful, but they know that the winds of culture are against them. So they're pushing back even harder. They're like, no, this is our, like, we have to stand for what we believe in.
And people pushing back is just proving them right because it's like the worldly view.
Exactly.
Getting their way.
And like every bad thing that happens in America is like, seems the fallen world, you know?
So it seems like we go directly from a easy way to look forward and explain away problems to, hey, that's what we are right now, but it's so much more specific and drilled down to, hey man, not only is it like, oh, something bad is happening to me in my village. It's like, whatever's happened bad to anyone on the planet is leading up to this. It seems like we've gorged ourselves at this dispensationalism buffet and as it relates to the end times.
Yeah. So that's it. I just wanted everyone to know that this is not something that is really in the Bible. It's not something that has even been a prominent belief in Christianity for very long. Mm-hmm. But it's so, like, it just has such an impact on us here in America. Well, and worldwide, because America has such an impact.
Yeah, for sure.
Culturally and, you know, politically, whatever. You know. Oh my God, that's a whole other thing. So I more just want to remind folks, this is not actually based in any like real reality, but a lot of very powerful people believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. And now so do all of us, unfortunately.
Yep.
And if you use the term us more loosely. Yeah. That's a fascinating, if not scary, quick look. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe it's not that scary. Independent thinkers start and say cool things that are true and right all the time.
And people pick up, they cherry pick whatever they like, and then it takes on its own life.
Yeah, they're not all doing a dispensationalism and allowing for, you know, the destruction of the planet. Sometimes they're doing other things. But I'm glad that we were able to, you know, scratch the surface on this. It sounds like there's a lot more.
There's a lot more. And again, like, just because of my, like, specific interests, I couldn't help but see all the parallels with QAnon thinking throughout this. And I think that the people picking up the rapture pieces of Darby, but not picking up his, like, the church structure is bad.
Right.
Is just so indicative of that cherry picking. I think it's called, like, a big tent belief system where it's like, we can accommodate a lot of different beliefs under this one tent so that we have power.
Yeah, because it's interesting to think about, like, Pentecostals and Methodists aren't murdering each other because they all kind of see each other under the big tent. And,
like, we're on the same team overall. Right,
versus all those, you know, heathen hordes out there, those rock and roll musics and devil worshipers and things like that.
Yeah, so I think it makes a lot of sense why, like, I just see a lot of similarities in the, like, a prophecy happened and it didn't actually, like, they made a prophecy and it didn't actually happen and they just kept on moving, like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's because that, like, you just pick and choose whatever works for you.
I reached out to the Patreon to get some sort of, like, kind of questions. Of course, this is as we said, an intro to this vague idea, not vague, intro to this huge idea that has splintered and vectored out in there. But I wanted to kind of, like, see what sort of things folks were curious about. And Mike Weber asks, I know some of the slow transition from Jesus' love, everyone unconditionally message to fire and brimstone in the U.S., but I always love learning more about how that shifted and maybe why. Is that sort of like the whole vibe of, like, well, now that we're towards the end times, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the classic, like, you have to have an out group and an in group.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're preaching the, like, oh, it's like they're all evil sinners out there and the world is fallen, but you're the good ones. Like, you're God's chosen. You're going to be picked to heaven. Like, so you always have to have that out group.
And it's like, no matter what, even if things are so bad, at least, you know, you guys are good.
Yes.
And how bad they are actually going to bring us towards the
end. Yeah, it's actually a good sign, because that just means Jesus is going to come back soon.
Yeah. Yeah. So I bet there's a lot more to all that stuff, just like shifting. But it definitely seems like that, the vibe of the fire and brimstone and all that stuff, goes against the sort of, like, we will eventually achieve enlightenment.
Oh, yeah. But that is to say, too, like, it's not like fire and brimstone is a recent invention either, because there actually are other earlier folks who kind of had a bit of that, like Cotton Mather, like, you look that guy up, Increase Mather. They were all about, like, God is going to rain down punishment. the Puritans loved that shit.
Yeah.
So I do think that the fire and brimstone thing, like, has definitely been, like, that's not a recent. That's been around, like, on and off over time. And it's interesting to see, like, which, like, time periods and which groups, like, picked up what, because some of those early Puritans were, like, similar to dispensationalists, but not exactly the same. It hadn't fully evolved there yet.
Jeff Ward asks, are the four horsemen actually a part of Revelation? I think this they is, are. Like, kind of a broad thing to kind of illustrate the dispensationalist vibe of, like, well, how much of all of this cartoon bullshit was in Darby's belief, even though it seems like it focused more on there's going to be the rapture and so forth.
Well, the four horsemen definitely are in the book of Revelation, but how they are interpreted has changed a lot over time. Like, some people, like, I know the whole, like, the white horse, some people used to, like, interpret as Jesus.
Hell yeah.
And some people interpreted it as the Antichrist.
Hell yeah.
So it's more just, like, the base is there, and people have interpreted it very differently depending on what was going on, what they were trying to prove. But no, the four horsemen are actually in there.
I feel like we as a people try to think about things as, like, flat and ubiquitous. So we're like, okay, well, in the year 1618, here's what everyone believed.
And then
in the year 1870, here's what everyone believed. And I think we know that that's not how it works.
Right. Well, it's different groups and, like, where geographical and, you know.
But it's definitely interesting to see that, like, okay, there's the, we're shooting for eventually becoming good through our collective sort of, like,
struggle,
betterment struggle, and then we will bring in the end times parentheses positive versus the end times parentheses derogatory.
Yeah, the end times fire brimstone.
Exactly. Well, I have 1,000 more questions about this, and I think there's 1,000 little ways that we can branch off of this, and for 10,000 different spin-off episodes. So I just want to thank you very much, Jennifer, for doing all this research. And I have become thirsty to find out more.
No, absolutely. You're welcome. And again, I really do recommend the book that I was reading, The Last Days Are Here Again, A History of the End Times by Richard Kyle, RIP. I really am sad. I really wanted to like talk to him because I would love to hear his take on QAnon stuff. Like, oh, and again, like he like literally does call it Tim LaHaye, but because this came out in 1998, like Yes, Left Behind had come out, but it hadn't become like a big thing.
It hadn't blown up yet.
So he didn't even address it. He does, I mean, Tim LaHaye wrote other like books about the end times, and he talks about those.
And we'll have to do episodes on those, even though I don't want to, but also they sound fun.
But I'm sad because I would have loved to talk to this guy.
Well, you know, I'm sure there's other guys out
there. I'm sure there are. Yeah. I just feel like it's funny, like how many like good academics are like, you know, like, I teach at Tabor College and like wherever. They're doing like really cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and again, like I get the sense that he is at like a religious college, but it reminded me of all of our professors at our religious college who are like, well, I still vaguely believe, but I am going to be real.
I consider myself a Christian. The earth is 38 billion years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Old,
you know, exactly. Shit like that. No, it was super interesting.
We got to get our professors on, Jennifer.
Oh my God, I kind of do want to. But I really want to get into Schofield, though, because, like, what a fucking scammer. Like, the whole, like, him being like, oh, I left my wife and child. Like, he, like, got married again. Like, he, like, literally, like, abandoned his, like, wife and child.
I love the idea.
And got jailed for forgery. It's hilarious.
I love the idea of somebody like, oh, I've now got you. And then the we got him folks.
And it's like,
who cares?
God damn it. The Schofield Reference Bible is like the most popular Bible. It did not matter. I mean, back in the day, you could just fucking like leave your life behind and be like, I'm going to be a pastor now. Yeah, fuck my wife.
That's cool.
King, child. I don't care about them.
Yeah. Goodbye. Well, let us know about all of this, what you would most like to hear more about.
Yeah. What are you interested in?
We have plans for a lot more, but which will most likely cover what you're interested in. But hey, maybe we'll do what you think is most interesting sooner, if you say so. And we are starting book two, Tribulation Force, soon.
Very soon.
Who knows how soon. Yeah, hopefully soon.
I feel like this is kind of like the kickoff of the next season.
Yes, exactly. We have the Greetings Adventurers Kickstarter recording weekend coming up soon, so that's going to eat up a lot of our time.
Yeah, I've also been very busy at work, unfortunately. Yeah, yeah.
You being so busy at work has pushed a lot of our stuff.
It has, because I get so tired from actually having to work at work.
Having two jobs. Damn.
Yeah, exactly. Podcaster and my day job.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for everyone over on patreon.com/contenthole to help us make sure episodes like this happen, and to give us the energy to keep on going. It means a lot. You can follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at TribForcePod.
Farce.
What'd I say?
Force.
Yeah, TribFarcePod. We don't tweet or Instagram a lot at all. We pretty much never Instagram.
No, I don't Instagram my own damn self and my own account. I barely tweet on my own damn account.
I do log into the Twitter every now and again, but don't really tweet from it. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Lanning and follow Jennifer on Twitter at Jennifer Cheek. Wow. Until next time, spread it, baby.
Spread the dispensationalism.
Spread them, baby.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.